Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Can Holding in a Fart Kill You? Over 150 Curious Questions and Intriguing Answers by Andrew Thompson. Narrated by Brian Holden. Can the Great Wall of China be seen from space? It is commonly said that the Great Wall of China is the only human-made structure that can be seen with the naked eye from space or the moon. This assertion has been perpetuated as a question in the board game Trivial Pursuit. It has also been included in school books across the world, and was stated as true by the Ed Harris character in the 1998 movie The Truman Show. In addition, Richard Halliburton's second Book of Marvels makes this claim, despite the fact that the book was published in 1938, before space exploration had begun. One school of thought is that the claim was made to convey the enormous scale of the wall and the vastness of human achievement in building it. It is now accepted that the statement is false. From a low orbit of Earth, up to about 200 miles, many human-made objects can be seen with the naked eye. Highways, airports, buildings, and ships, as well as the Great Wall, can be seen. The wall's width ranges from about 15 to 30 feet. But when dust storms hit it, it becomes more visible at this close range because of the combined size of the wall and the dust turbulence. But no human-made structures are visible with the naked eye above an altitude of a few thousand miles, and certainly not from the moon. The moon is around 240,000 miles away, and from there, entire continents and oceans are barely visible without mechanical assistance. These facts have been confirmed beyond any doubt by a number of astronauts. Why is the ocean salty? The oceans of the world cover around 70% of the Earth's surface. They are filled with salt, and, despite much mythology on the topic, it is not commonly known why. There are many constituents of seawater, but the primary chemicals are sodium and chloride. These are the components of salt and account for the salty taste of the ocean. All water contains some salt, but the salts in seawater are increased by the gradual dissolution of the Earth's crust and the erosion of rocks and mountains. Rainwater is slightly acidic from the carbon dioxide it absorbs from the air. When rain falls to the ground, its carbonic acid erodes rocks and forms ions, mainly sodium and chloride ions. Rainwater and rivers then transport these minerals from rocks and soil to the sea, increasing the salt content. The salt content of the ocean is also augmented by evaporation. The sun evaporates fresh water from the surface of the ocean to the atmosphere, leaving the salts behind. This process is known as the hydrologic cycle. Because only fresh water is evaporated and rain brings more salts to the sea, as time passes, the oceans are actually becoming saltier. In fact, it is thought that the oceans contain 50 million billion tons of salt, and that if all the salt was removed from the world's oceans and spread across the land, the layer would be approximately 180 yards or 165 meters thick. The salinity of different oceans varies according to location. In areas of high water temperature, the evaporation rate is increased, leading to saltier water. Oceans that are remote from land also receive a smaller influx of fresh water, which increases their salinity. In polar areas where the salt is diluted by melting ice and excess rain, salinity tends to be low. The saltiest areas of all the oceans are the Red Sea and the Persian Gulf, where evaporation is at its highest. What causes headaches? Medically known as cephalalgia, headaches have a multitude of causes, such as sleep deprivation, dehydration, stress, eye strain, sinus pain, and muscle tension. Where there is a disorder or pain somewhere in the body, nociceptors, which are pain-sensitive receptors at the ends of nerve fibers, are activated. The nociceptors send a signal to the brain, which the brain interprets as pain. A headache results. The area of the head where the pain is felt depends on the location of the activated nociceptors. When the brain is alerted to pain, it also produces a number of chemicals, including serotonin, that act to reduce pain. However, the release of these chemicals can cause a swelling of blood vessels in the brain, making the blood vessels tender. The swollen vessels then irritate the nerve fibers that surround them in the head. These nerve fibers send messages to the trigeminal system, which is an area of the brain dealing with pain in the face and head. This can cause the headache to worsen. Medication to alleviate the effects of a headache works best if taken early. Once the pathways for the pain signals transmitted by the nerves are fully activated, it is more difficult to prevent the signals and thus reduce the headache. How do gun silencers work? A silencer, also known as a suppressor, is a device that is attached to the end of a gun barrel to reduce the amount of noise that is generated when the gun is fired. When the trigger of a loaded gun is pulled, gunpowder is ignited, which creates high-pressure hot gas. This expanding gas forces the bullet down the barrel of the gun, resulting in a loud noise as the bullet exits. The silencer is usually a cylindrical piece of metal that is screwed on to the end of the barrel, although it can be attached to the gun as a permanent fixture. It is composed of a group of baffles inside an expansion chamber. The baffles are hollow plates that divert the flow of the gas within the expansion chamber, which is larger in diameter than the barrel of the gun. This allows the gas to cool and reduce in energy. As the gas leaves the expansion chamber, its pressure and speed are less. This greatly reduces the sound when the bullet and gas are released. In this way, the silencer has a similar effect as the muffler of a car. Silencers are most effective when attached to small-caliber weapons, especially when subsonic bullets are used. These are bullets that make less noise as they travel slower than the speed of sound. Some silencers use small quantities of oil or water to cool the gas and reduce its pressure. These are known as wet suppressors. The term silencer is actually a misnomer, as a silencer only decreases the noise created. It doesn't eliminate it. Silencers are often depicted incorrectly in movies and on television shows. In these fictional portrayals, virtually no sound is heard when a gun with a silencer is fired. The commercial silencer was invented by Hiram Maxim and first sold in 1902 in the United States. The legality of the silencer varies widely in different parts of the world. What is the origin of the Scottish kilt? One of the most widely recognized traditional garments for men, the kilt is associated with the Scottish Highlands. The word derives from hilt, a Norse word meaning pleated. The hilt was a similar item of apparel worn by Viking settlers. The Great Kilt dates back to at least 1600 in Scotland, when it was worn by military troops. It was a large garment, about 5 yards long, worn by draping it across the shoulder and over the body. The lower portion was gathered in pleats and secured with a belt. It provided ideal protection from the cold and the elements. The origin of the smaller and more convenient modern kilt has been the topic of heated debate. Many say that it was invented in 1720 by Thomas Rawlinson, who was English. He owned a charcoal production plant in Scotland and had the great kilt tailored to make it more practical for working men. However, it is now known that the modern kilt was worn before Rawlinson, and one, which resides at the Scottish Tartan Society, has been dated to 1692. By the mid-1700s, the modern kilt had become popular throughout the Highlands and parts of the Lowlands. When parts of the Scottish military were deployed abroad, the different regiments were assigned different tartans as a means of identification, although some say the tartan was used to distinguish different clans of people in Scotland. In 1746, the English government controlled Scotland. Wary of a Highland uprising, the English government prohibited Highlanders from possessing arms. The Dress Act was also enacted, which outlawed all aspects of Highland attire, including the kilt. This ban lasted for 35 years, during which time many Highland customs were lost. Upper-class Scots set up societies advocating the resurgence of ancient Highland dress. The Celtic Society of Edinburgh encouraged Lowlanders to join them, and the movement gained momentum. In 1822, King George IV visited Scotland and wore a kilt. Queen Victoria then promoted the wearing of kilts, and the style became widespread. Today, kilts are commonly worn at Scottish formal occasions, although some continue to wear the kilt daily. What makes popcorn pop? First developed by Native Americans, popcorn has been popularly sold in movie theaters since 1912. The first commercial popcorn machine was invented in 1885 in Chicago. Popcorn is an ancient type of maize that is specially cultivated to increase the corn's ability to pop. In fact, popcorn is the only type of corn that pops, and the name comes from the Middle English word pop, which means explosive sound. Popcorn is able to pop because its tiny kernels contain a small amount of water, at least 14% is required. Unlike most corn, popcorn's kernel is encased inside a hard, waterproof outer shell. When heated with oil to around 350 degrees Fahrenheit, or 170 degrees Celsius, the water evaporates and expands, creating high pressure, which is unable to escape. This pressure builds and eventually forces the outer casing to explode, turning the kernel inside out. The sudden explosion changes the starch inside the kernel into a light foam and gives cooked popcorn its peculiar appearance. Popcorn coated with butter is the most popular variety, and the kernels that fail to pop are known as old maids. What causes a stitch during exercise? A stitch, formerly known as exercise-related transient abdominal pain, or ETAP, is a sharp, stabbing pain that commonly occurs just under the rib cage during exercise. A stitch can also result in a stabbing pain in the shoulder blade, which is thought to be a pain referral site for the abdomen. It is not entirely clear what causes a stitch. It was traditionally thought that exercise makes internal organs, such as the liver, pull on the ligaments that connect the gut to the diaphragm, resulting in stress or a stitch. Others believed that a stitch is caused by blood being redirected away from the diaphragm to the limb muscles used during exercise. It is now commonly thought that a stitch results from the irritation of two layers of the membrane lining that is inside the wall of the abdomen. The two layers are separated by a lubricating fluid, which allows them to move against each other without friction. Scientists believe that a stitch is the pain that occurs when the two layers rub against each other and create friction. This is thought to be caused by either a reduction in the fluid that lubricates the two layers, or by a distended stomach forcing the layers close together. This friction is generally more likely to occur during exercises that involve an up-and-down action, such as running or jumping. Eating or drinking inappropriately before exercise can result in a full stomach or dehydration, the latter causing a lack of lubrication. Both can lead to a stitch. The best way of avoiding a stitch is to drink water or sports drinks, which empty from the stomach faster than concentrated drinks, such as cordials, soft drinks, or fruit juice. Drinking small quantities on a regular basis rather than consuming large volumes is also preferable. The best way to get rid of a stitch? Stop exercising, bend forward, and tighten the abdominal muscles while taking deep breaths. A stitch is rarely a sign of a serious problem and usually passes a few minutes after the person with a stitch stops exercising. What is the history of the pizza? The pizza, in one form or another, has been around for thousands of years. Some claim it is based on pita bread eaten in the Middle East. Some say that its origin is flatbreads, resembling the modern-day focaccia, which were eaten in ancient times around the Mediterranean. Archaeologists have uncovered structures resembling pizzerias in the remains of Pompeii, which was destroyed in AD 79 by the eruption of Mount Vesuvius. Evidence also suggests that the Greeks brought pizza to Italy in the AD 1st century. Flat-baked breads covered in dressings were also said to be eaten in Rome in 300 BC. The word pizza, meaning pie, first appeared near Naples in Rome in AD 1000, and it is often accepted that Naples is the origin of the modern-day pizza, with the Neapolitan being the original pizza. The first modern-day pizzeria, which is still in existence, was opened in Naples by Raffaele Esposito in 1830. Pizza was considered food for the poor person, but to honor a visit by King Umberto I and Queen Margherita of Italy, Esposito created a special pizza resembling the Italian flag. The queen was impressed, and the Margherita pizza was born. The pizza was brought from Naples to the United States in 1897 by Gennaro Lombardi, who opened a general store in New York which sold pizza. The pizzas became so popular that he opened the first American pizzeria in 1905. Called Lombardi's, the shop still operates today. In the early 1900s in the United States, pizza was eaten predominantly by immigrant Italians. During World War II, American troops in Italy ate pizza extensively. When they returned, pizza became popular throughout the United States. Pizza shops began opening in the 1950s, and the trend spread quickly. Today, pizza is an international food. What makes drugs addictive? Drug addiction is the dependence on a substance to the point where the user feels that he or she must have the drug, regardless of consequences. Addiction varies from drug to drug. Compared with alcohol, it generally takes far less use of heroin to become addicted. Drug addiction also varies from person to person, and some people are genetically predisposed to it. The most common drug addictions are to alcohol, caffeine, and nicotine. The addiction to drugs is either physical or psychological, or both. Physical dependency means the chemistry of the addict is altered so that he or she must have the drug or suffer symptoms of withdrawal. Without the drug, the addict might feel physically ill. Psychological dependency occurs when the person relies on the drug emotionally and craves it for feelings of reward. Without the drug, the addict might feel stressed or fearful, so he or she keeps taking it to feel good. Scientists believe that certain drugs, including cocaine and amphetamines, stimulate particular areas of the brain to release large amounts of dopamine, a chemical that occurs naturally in the brain and produces a feeling of euphoria. Other drugs, including alcohol, mimic endorphins, which have an effect that is similar to that of dopamine and produce euphoria. After prolonged exposure to either type of drug, this feeling of euphoria can come to dominate the person's thoughts, and a physical or psychological dependency is the result. Once the euphoria associated with the drug has passed, a protein is produced in the brain that inhibits the release of dopamine. This can leave the drug user depressed and unable to derive pleasure from previously enjoyable activities. This generally leads to the person taking the drug again to feel normal, often in larger doses because of the built-up level of tolerance. And so the cycle continues, and the dependency increases. How and why do chameleon lizards change color? The chameleon is a small lizard found mainly in Africa and Madagascar, but also parts of Europe and Asia, that is famous for being able to change its color. Most people believe that the chameleon changes color as a means of camouflage. It blends in with its surroundings. Not true. The lizard changes color depending on its physical or emotional disposition at the time. Chameleons change color in response to changes in light and temperature. The change of colors also depends on the mood of the lizard and plays a major role in communication with other chameleons. Their colors range from brown and green to red, blue, and yellow. Coincidentally, brown and green often match the chameleon's background, which leads people to think that camouflage is the reason for the change. In cold conditions, a chameleon will turn a darker color to absorb more heat, and in hot and bright conditions, a chameleon will turn a lighter color to reflect the heat. To attract a mate, a male chameleon will exhibit his brightest and most impressive colors. If a rival male approaches, he will turn a bright color such as red, indicating that he is a healthy specimen and ready to fight. If a chameleon is scared, it will often turn a dark color. Chameleons are able to change colors because of their unusual genetics. Special cells lie in layers beneath their transparent skin. The upper layer contains red and yellow pigments, while the lower layer contains a colorless substance that reflects the blue part of light. Under these cells is a dark layer of melanin. This melanin influences how light or dark the reflected light is. Depending on the temperature, the brightness, or the chameleon's mood, hormones trigger the chameleon's brain to send a signal to activate particular cells. This message tells the cells to expand or contract, redistributing their colors and creating a different overall color for the lizard. For example, if the upper cells are yellow and the lower cells reflect the blue part of light, the colors mix and the chameleon turns green. The result of this unique chemistry is a lizard that can produce a wide variety of different colors to suit its circumstances. Why is it called an Indian summer? An Indian summer is a short period of warm and sunny weather just prior to winter. It usually occurs in autumn, sometime after the first frost of the year. The expression is also used to refer to a happy time that arrives near the end of something. This term has been used for more than 2 centuries, and its origin is unclear. Many believe the phrase is based on American Indians raiding the European colonists. These raids generally occurred in the warm months, ceasing when it turned cold. If good weather returned in autumn, the raids would start again, and the period was said to be an Indian summer. There is a reference to this meaning in Joseph Doddridge's 1824 book, Notes on the Indian Wars in West Virginia, but this theory is now considered inaccurate because the term was first used in 1778, years after Indian raids had been commonplace. Some say that Indian summer is the period when the early American colonists would harvest their crops, while others say that Indian summer is so named because it was more common in the territories of the American Indians, in the north and the west, than on the eastern seaboard, which was largely populated by colonists. Another theory is that, like an Indian giver, an offensive term meaning a person who pretends to give a gift and then takes it back or expects a similar gift in return, an Indian summer is a false summer. Lending credence to this is the 1942 book American Speech. 'Tis but an Indian kind of summer after all, as false and fickle as they. Another proposed etymology is that the term originated with the practice of loading ships full of cargo when traveling across the Indian Ocean during a time of favorable weather conditions, or Indian summer. The name ISL, an abbreviation for Indian Summer Line, was stamped on the hull of some ships. Although more than one, or even many, of these theories about the origin of the term could be correct, the most credible is probably the one found in the 1778 book Letters from an American Farmer by Michel Guillaume Jean de Crevecoeur, a French-American farmer. The book refers to the winter being preceded by a short interval of smoke and mildness, called Indian Summer. Other books discuss smoke during this period, and it is thought that this relates to the Indians either flushing out animals to hunt before the winter or burning the grassy areas in preparation for the following year's planting. Did Robinson Crusoe actually exist? In 1719, Daniel Defoe published the now famous book Robinson Crusoe. The book is said to be based on the true story of Alexander Selkirk, a Scottish sailor born in 1676. Selkirk sailed on one of William Dampier's boats and, in 1704, while near the Juan Fernandez Islands, 400 miles off the coast of Chile, he had a dispute with the captain of the ship over the vessel's seaworthiness. Selkirk requested to be put ashore on one of the islands, where he would wait to be picked up by another passing ship. Selkirk lived alone on the uninhabited island for more than 4 years. He took a musket and gunpowder, a knife, some tools, his clothing, and a Bible. At first, Selkirk remained on the beach and read the Bible while waiting for a passing rescue ship. None came. He slept in a cave before moving inland and building a permanent hut. Pestered at nighttime by rats, he domesticated feral cats to rid himself of the rodents. Fresh water was plentiful, and there were goats on the island from earlier Spanish ships. He constantly kept a fire burning on a hillside in an attempt to attract passing ships. Selkirk was industrious and made good use of what was available to him. He learned to make fire from rubbing wood together, fashioned clothes from goatskin, and tamed the wild goats. During his stay, 2 boats landed on shore. But because they were Spanish, Selkirk was forced to run and hide to avoid being killed. As the years passed, he began to revel in his solitude. In 1709, Selkirk saw a boat, the Duke, bearing an English flag. The crew of the ship saw what they described as a wild man. The pilot of one of the longboats that came ashore was William Dampier, who vouched for Selkirk's story. Selkirk was rescued. As it turned out, his original decision to leave the ship saved his life. The ship had sunk near Peru, and its crew either drowned or were captured and imprisoned. Selkirk never readjusted to the civilized world, which he said could not, with all its enjoyments, restore me to the tranquility of my solitude. Within a few years, Selkirk returned to sea. He is thought to have died of yellow fever in 1721. One of the islands in the region where he was stranded bears his name, that of the real-life Robinson Crusoe. What are the health risks of cell phones? Since the massive increase of cell phone use in recent years, health concerns have been raised, in particular whether they cause brain tumors. This has resulted in extensive research on both animals and people. Cell phones use electromagnetic waves in the microwave range. Some of these waves can be absorbed into the human head. Microwaves are known to produce dielectric heating in which living tissue is heated. With cell phone use, this results in the temperature of the head increasing slightly. Some experts suggest that cell phone use may lead to brain tumors, although others say that the brain easily disposes of excess heat by regulating its blood circulation. It is also thought that the levels of radiation emitted by cell phones damage the blood-brain barrier, which prevents harmful substances from entering the brain. Some studies have shown that the radiation causes the cells in blood vessels to shrink, allowing molecules to pass into the brain tissue. A 2004 study found evidence of DNA damage to cells, as well as gene and chromosome damage, and an increased rate of cell division, often associated with certain types of cancer. A more recent study from a Swedish team suggests that the radiation emitted causes damage to nerve fibers, potentially resulting in brain tumors. The study says a person would probably have to use a cell phone for more than 10 years to be at risk. Most of these studies have been carried out on animals, and it is unknown if the same effects would be seen in people. The majority of studies have found no substantive evidence that cell phones are harmful to human health. But no proof exists that they are safe either. Most experts agree that the current evidence is inconclusive. Nevertheless, the United Kingdom government advises that cell phone users exercise caution and keep call length to a minimum. In addition, those users younger than 16, whose nervous systems may still be developing, should take extra care to reduce their usage. What is the origin of Halloween? Halloween falls on October 31st and is celebrated in much of the Western world. It usually involves children dressing up in costumes and knocking on doors in a ritual known as trick-or-treating. The theme of the night is ghosts, witches, and magic, with black cats, goblins, and candles and pumpkins being the prominent symbols. Halloween's origin dates back to the pagan Celtic festival of Samhain. More than 2,000 years ago, the Celts celebrated their new year on November 1st. That day marked the end of the harvest and the beginning of the long winter, a time when death ran rife. The Celts believed that on the night before the new year, the ghosts of the dead returned to earth. The harvest festival began on October 31st. Fires were lit, and sacrifices of animals, crops, and even humans were offered to their gods. Those at the festival wore costumes and masks in an attempt to ward off evil spirits. An ember from the fire was given to each family on November 1st to take home for a new fire. This was thought to keep homes free from evil spirits throughout the winter. When the Romans conquered the Celtic lands, they combined two of their festivals with the Festival of Samhain. One was the Festival of Pomona, which honored the goddess of fruit and trees, and the other was Feralia, a day in October when they honored the dead. By AD 800, Christianity had spread, and Pope Boniface IV made November 1st the day to honor saints and martyrs. It was All Saints' Day, also called All Hallows, from All Hallowed Souls. The night before was known as All Hallows' Eve, which was eventually contracted to Halloween. Trick-or-treating is thought to have originated with the European custom of souling in the AD 800s. On All Souls' Day, on November 2nd, beggars would walk from village to village begging for bread with currants, known as soul cakes. In return for the cakes, the beggars would say prayers for the person's dead relatives, which were thought to assist the dead soul's passage to heaven. Irish immigrants brought the custom of Halloween to America in the 1840s. What caused the Great Depression? The Great Depression, which ran from 1929 until 1939, was a massive worldwide economic recession. It was the longest and most severe such contraction ever to hit the industrialized world and remains one of the most studied economic events. Despite this, experts still disagree on its cause. Although the Wall Street stock market crash is often cited as
sample complete. Ready to continue?